to buzz you in. For that, I'll need some ID. Do you have to buzz people out? He shook his head. Against the fire code, I think. The stairs would have been a better way to exit. The door was out of the way and didn't chime, as the elevator's doors did, to announce when someone was leaving. She'd take Brother Wolf up that way, if she could talk her way around the ID thing. She hadn't brought any with her, and wouldn't have used it if she had. She wouldn't lie with a false ID, and she had no intention of giving them any more personal information than she could help, not unless Bran told her differently. "Do you have a card from Agent Fisher or Agent Goldstein of the FBI?" Anna asked. He looked at the small collection of cards on the desk in front of him. "Agent Fisher, yes." "Why don't you buzz us in and call her? She called me in and I left in a hurry and forgot my purse and ID. She's expecting me." He frowned at her. "Really?" Anna said, dryly. "Woman with werewolf? It's hard to mistake us for anyone else." The security guard's eyes widened, and he took another good look at Brother Wolf, who slowly wagged his tail and kept his mouth closed. Apparently, he decided not to torment the young man. "I thought they'd be bigger," the security guard said unexpectedly. "And, you know, grayer."
"Less civilized? More slathering?" asked Anna with a smile. "Half human, half wolf, all monster?"
"Ah." He gave a quick smile and kept a wary eye on Brother Wolf. "Can I plead the fifth on that? You still have to wait until I call for confirmation. If I don't know you, you don't get in without ID or an invitation." "Did the police already ask you about the people who came in today?" Anna asked. The guard nodded. "Everybody, police, FBI, and possibly a dozen other agencies and people as far as I could tell, starting with Lizzie's father." "I don't need to repeat their work, then," Anna said. He gave her a polite smile, picked up the phone, and called the number from a card resting on top of the desk. "This is Chris at the security desk downstairs. I have a woman and a werewolf down here."
"Send them up," said Leslie Fisher's voice. She sounded a good deal less calm than she had when she'd called Anna. She hung up without ceremony.
Chris, the security guard, nodded at Anna. "I'll buzz you through. How come you're taking the stairs? 12 stories is a lot."
"He doesn't like elevators," Anna said.
"And it sounds like, if she was kidnapped, maybe her assailant would have taken her down the stairway because you'd have noticed him in the elevator."
She indicated the wolf with a tip of her head.
"He's got a good nose. We'll check it out."
Chris looked at Brother Wolf with less fear and more interest.
"It would be good," he said, "if he could find a fast."
Anna nodded.
"We'll try."
Brother Wolf trotted up the stairs, scenting the people who'd come this way. There were old scents. Several people had dogs, and someone had the worst cologne, and 6 or 8 fresher scents. As he and Anna moved up at an even and steady pace, the other scents fell away, leaving just a few. He could smell the woman who cleaned here. She came up often, but there was another that overlaid it, fresher by days. Brother Wolf pinned his ears and stopped, because Charles told him what he was smelling was unlikely.
"What?"
asked Anna. Then, more properly, "What?"
"She came here on her own, without touching the floor."
Brother Wolf knew his tone was grumpy, but he could not change what was just because it didn't make Charles happy.
"Sliding against the wall about 3 feet from the floor. Charles says no."
"Fair enough,"
said Anna, her voice soothing his ruffled fur. "Momentarily inexplicable evidence in an abduction that possibly involves fey or werewolves isn't surprising when you think about it." She put her hand on his head, between his ears. "Arguing with your senses at this point is useless, which is something Charles taught me. There will be an explanation.
Let's see what her condo tells us."
More cheerfully, because she had taken his side over Charles's, Brother Wolf resumed the hunt. They came by and by to the 12th floor, where Anna held the door open for him. It wasn't difficult to locate the missing girl's condo because, like the building itself, there were police and other people standing around just outside the door. The woman from the FBI was there, her arms folded and her face set. In front of her was a delicately built man, taller than the FBI woman, but he appeared shorter because of his build. His hair was chestnut and grayed at the sides. Fae. Brother Wolf's nose could smell it. Some sort of water fae, maybe. He smelled like a freshwater lake at dawn. He looked so very helpless, this fae, though there was no sense of timidity about him. Brother Wolf couldn't get a fix on how powerful he was, either. Brother Wolf was no expert on fae, though he'd met his share. But it seemed to him that the ability to hide from all of Brother Wolf's senses might mean the same thing among the fae as it did among the werewolves. Only Bran could hide what he was so well that Brother Wolf could not immediately discern his power. "We are doing what we can," the FBI woman said. "We don't know if this case is related to the others, only that our serial killer has been killing fae for a number of years and abducts his prey in a manner similar to this. No one sees or hears anything, though the abduction site is well guarded or well populated." "My daughter is only half fae," said the man. "And until Officer Mooney here asked me, no one knew it. No one. There is no reason to suppose that your serial killer has my daughter before your forensic people go in to see what they can find. I was in there, and there is no sign of a struggle. We were meeting to celebrate her successful audition. She won a place in a top-flight ballet troupe, and she would not have stood me up, not without calling to cancel. If there is no sign of a struggle, then she knew her kidnapper and let him get too close. She was a trained athlete, and I saw to it she knew how to defend herself. I need to find her address book, and you need to start down the line and send people to visit each and every person there while we wait for the kidnappers to call and demand a ransom. We are wasting time." This one, thought Brother Wolf, was used to giving orders rather than following them. He might have been tempted to teach him better, except for the smell of frantic worry and heartsick terror that the Fae was covering with quiet orders. "If it is our serial killer," said the FBI woman, sounding much more patient than she smelled, "then there will be nothing our forensic units can find, and it won't be anyone she knows. I have a..." Something caused her to look around just then. Probably the startled swear word one of the young cops said when she noticed Anna and Brother Wolf standing just outside of the stairwell.
"The FBI woman."
"Leslie Fisher," admonished Anna, because she had a thing about proper word names. To demonstrate that he knew perfectly well who he was talking about, Brother Wolf sent her a complicated impression of muted dominance, human, and a scent that was a combination of skin, hygiene products, and a family smell, indicating that the FBI woman had a long-term relationship with a male and several not-adult children and two cats. He was showing off a little, because it took a lot of experience to separate a person's scent into so much detail. Anna thunked him lightly on the head with her knuckles. "Behave," she told him sternly. But he felt her laughter. "Here they are," said the FBI woman, Leslie Fisher. Her eyes slid over him twice. She blinked, then focused on the leash. Anna smiled. "We use the collar and leash because it makes people feel safer," she explained. "That way no one does anything stupid." The Fae looked at Brother Wolf and reached for a sword on his hip that wasn't there, which seemed to discomfort him quite a bit. Brother Wolf relayed that to Anna so that she would know that the Fae saw them as a possible threat. "Anna Smith and Charles Smith, I'd like to introduce you to Alistair Beauclerk, a partner at the legal firm of Beauclerk, Hutton, and Solis. He was to meet his daughter, Lizzie Beauclerk, age 22, here at 11 p.m. for a late celebration. But sometime between when he talked to her at 6 p.m. and when he came at 10 minutes before 11, she went missing." Though her tone was mild, her body language, the way her own hand moved so she could reach a weapon and the spike in her pulse, told Brother Wolf that the FBI woman had seen what he saw. She talked more than she'd had to in order to give everyone time to calm down, all of which made her altogether more of a person to him, because she was not anyone's victim, and she was smart,
Leslie Fisher of the FBI.
Sir, said Anna, we're here to help. In addition to his other victims, this killer has taken out 3 werewolves in Boston this summer.
The slender man let his eyes drift from Anna to Brother Wolf, and Brother Wolf resisted displaying his fangs because he'd promised Charles that he would take care of Anna. Provoking a fight with a fae might be entertaining, but it was not protecting Anna.
You're both werewolves, said the fae. Anna nodded. Does she have a lot of people over?
He shook his head.
She spends 6 to 8 hours a day taking classes and rehearsing. Usually she'll meet her friends at a club or restaurant if they want to go out. Most of her friends are dancers too, which means poor. I think it embarrasses her to live this upscale. Her mother lives in Florida with her stepfather, as do Lizzie's 2 younger half-siblings.
Good, that will help a lot. So, who has been in the apartment tonight?
Leslie raised her hand.
Me.
Pointed to the fae.
He has.
She looked around.
Hey, Moon. Moony, are you still around?
One of the police officers, farther down the corridor, stepped out from behind several others and raised his hand.
Right here,
he said.
If that's true, that'll really help when we go in to check who's been in there. But Charles needs to scent you all so he can discount your presence. He won't hurt you, just stand still.
Anna dropped the leash. Brother Wolf approached the policeman with his ears up and his tail wagging gently, and the man still stiffened and lost color. That was fine, enjoyable even. Not as much fun as if he'd run away, but Brother Wolf took his pleasure where he found it. Still, a quick sniff from several feet out was enough. When he had the policeman scent, he stopped by the fae, who kept a wary eye on him, but otherwise did not object. Interestingly, Leslie Fisher didn't flinch either. Only her rising pulse gave her fear away. He liked her better all the time. He looked at his mate.
Anyone else that we know has been in there tonight?
Anna asked.
No, said Leslie. As soon as I got here, I sealed the room.
If you'll let us in?
Anna nodded at the apartment's door.
Brother Wolf waited until they were closed in the apartment together before setting to work. Cross-scenting a room was old hat, but required no less concentration than the first time he'd done it. He just did a better job now. It was a matter of dismissing old or stale scents, then sorting through the ones he'd picked up in the hallway and seeing what was left. The woman's scent he'd picked up in the hallway was the one he'd found in the stairwell. Outside of her father, once he left the main living space, there were no scents of anyone who had been there in the last 6 months. Only the woman's scent was in her bedroom.
She was a dancer, her father said.
Charles told Brother Wolf.
Look at the closets. One for everyday clothing and for parties, the other filled with workout clothes and a few competition dresses, ballroom competitions. I thought her father said she danced ballet.
Brother Wolf considered it.
The first set of clothing is camouflage,
he offered. It was good that Charles had decided to participate instead of just observe.
The clothes in this one are a disguise to help her blend in and look like everyone else. They smell like perfume. She even hid her scent when she wore them. The second is who she really is. They smell like long hours working, like triumph and pain, blood and sweat.
Brother Wolf grew more interested in her bedroom. She was as much the prey he hunted as the one who took her was. Maybe something he could learn about her would help in their search. On the wall were some framed art photo prints of dancers, and 8 of them were black and white photos set in a circle. Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers were immortalized in a moment when Ginger was up in the air, a huge smile on her face, and Fred had a sly grin. Another black and white was of the scene from Dirty Dancing that caught the primary actors on hands and knees staring hungrily at each other, though the tension of their pose told the observer that they were still in the midst of a dance. A number of other dancers he didn't know, mostly couples in a wide variety of dances from ballroom to tribal to modern. In the center of the circle of photos was a poster-sized image that dominated the room.
The photographer had caught a male dancer in mid-flight, stretched across the canvas in a graceful Y. His feet, at the lower left-hand corner, were slightly out of focus, giving the photo a sense of aliveness and making the stillness of the rest of it more profound. The dancer's left arm, farther from the viewer, was stretched out to the top right, and his right arm, nearer to the viewer, flung back to the top left corner. His head was bowed, the line of his body so pure and straight, he might have been swinging from the rope of a pirate ship. His muscles were flexed and straining, yet somehow he managed to give the impression of being relaxed, at peace. Unlike the others, it was in color, but just barely, as if someone had filled it with shades of brown. The loose white shirt he'd worn looked cream, his tights were taupe, and the backdrop came out a dark brown rather than black. A warm, beautiful image.
Rudolf Nureyev, supplied Charles.
Brother Wolf, called Anna from somewhere nearby. Charles, could you come here for a moment? I think I smell something.
She was standing out in the hallway, next to the bathroom, a thoughtful look on her face.
What do you smell?
She asked him. And when she did, he came another step closer and caught it too.
Terror,
he answered, and tried again, closing his eyes to shut out other senses.
Blood. Her blood and...
A low growl rose.
And his.
She had fought her attacker, the little dancer had. It was only a small drop of blood, but it was enough.
He licked it, feeling the scent rise up as soon as his tongue touched it, breaking the magic of concealment that had tried to hide even so little of the man who had come here to do harm.
A man, but not human, or not wholly human. The bitter flavor of magic in the blood made his tongue tingle. He would recognize this man when he smelled him again.
Half-blood fey,
he told her.
We probably should have left that blood for the FBI labs, said Anna, her tone a little rueful.
My hunt,
Brother Wolf assured her, though Charles agreed with Anna.
My rules.
That last was as much for Charles as for Anna. He looked at the closed bathroom door. If he'd been stalking her, he might have waited in the bathroom.
Would you open the door so I can seek him there?
She wrapped her hand in the tail of her shirt and opened it. At first, he thought there was nothing to find, that the woman's attacker had awaited her somewhere else. Then he caught a faint trace of excitement, something he felt almost more than scented, and a hint of something else that brought Charles to the fore, drawn by something he understood better than the wolf did. Spirits. Some homes had spirits, and some did not, and neither he nor Charles knew why that was. Spirits weren't ghosts. They were the consciousness of things that Charles's Da didn't believe were alive. Trees and water, stones and earth, houses and apartments. Some of them, anyway. This one was faint and shy, better for the shaman's son to deal with rather than the wolf.
Show me,
said Charles to the spirit of the house.
Show me who waited here.
The condo was new. It had not been a home for generations of children, so the spirit was weak. All it was able to give them was an impression of patience and largeness, so much larger than she whose home this was. Clean-smelling, no, that was wrong. He smelled of cleaners. He carried a... something.
Something?
Charles was patient with it.
A weapon?
Brother Wolf provided the smell of a gun, oil, powder, metal. Swift negation and a response, an answer more sensory than in words. Something soft, mostly textile, with only a hint of metal.
A bag, like a gym bag,
Charles thought, picturing such a bag carefully in his head. And the spirit all but jumped for joy, providing more and more information about the bag, as if by naming it, Charles had pulled a cork out of the bottle of what the spirit knew.
He brought a bag,
Brother Wolf told Anna, triumphantly, because he'd been right about the stairway.
A big canvas bag, and stuffed our missing woman inside. He carried her down the stairs, which is why I could only smell her along the walls.
He has no scent? Anna asked, having caught something of what he'd found. Her voice sent the shy spirit fleeing.
He hid his scent with magic that feels something like fey magic, Charles told her.
Brother Wolf thought of the bitter taste that still lingered on his tongue from the kidnapper's blood.
It also feels like witch magic, black and blood-soaked.
Charles agreed.
It feels less civilized than the fey magic I'm familiar with.
Would a witch have been able to carry a full-grown woman down 12 flights of stairs? Anna asked.
Maybe not directly,
answered Charles after a moment of consideration.
But there are ways.
Early in the hunt, said Anna.
Exactly,
agreed Charles. Who do we know who knows a lot about fey and their magic? Asked Anna. Would Bran know?
We have a better source,
suggested Brother Wolf.
Her father is old and powerful.
He reached for a sword, Anna said. Is that how you could tell he was old? Brother Wolf supplied the memory of the scent of creatures that were older than a few centuries, a light fragrance that grew richer.
Old,
explained Charles. And then they gave her what power smelled like among the fae, beginning with something weaker and increasing until Charles told her,
That is strength. But they are subtle creatures, the fae. They cannot add to their scent because they, for the most part, cannot smell it. However, when they conceal what they are, sometimes they can also obscure what we can smell about them. This one smells old, but he smells as weak as is possible for someone who still smells like fey.
So, a fey will probably not smell more powerful or old than he is, said Anna. But he might smell weaker, like the way Bran enjoys hiding what he is. Brother Wolf huffed out an affirmative sneeze. Charles added,
I think it might be a good thing to discuss this with Lizzie's father when there are no humans present.
Discuss how powerful he is? Asked his mate. A corner of her mouth twitched up. She knew what Charles had meant. She had a silly sense of humor sometimes. Brother Wolf liked that about her. Charles, however, was in a more serious mood and treated her question as if she'd really meant it.
No, discuss with him what kind of fey would fit the parameters we have been given for this serial killer.
Brother Wolf sneezed to let her know that he thought she was funny. Did you find something? Asked Leslie as Anna let Charles and herself out of the apartment. Anna looked at the techie-type police officers who awaited them and wondered if it was the serial killer angle or something about the missing girl's father that had brought out the big guns on a missing persons case where the victim had been gone for only a few hours. Yes, Anna said, answering the FBI agent's question. Whoever took her is fey or has some access to fey magic. He concealed himself in her bathroom and waited for her to come to him. After gesturing the waiting forensic team into the condo, Leslie took out a small spiral notebook and began scribbling things down in it. She didn't look up when she said, What else did you find? He came up unobserved. A pureblood fey could have come up looking like anyone else, probably someone who actually lives here, Anna told her. It was speculation, but that was what she'd have done if she could conceal herself the way the fey could. They had several variants of the don't-look-at-me magic that were stronger than pack magic was. But glamour, the power that all fae shared, was more than that, a very strong illusion. However he arrived, he left with his prey in a gym bag and carried her down the stairs. Leslie looked up at that.
He carried her down 12 flights of stairs.
Without dragging her, Anna said, putting a finger on the hallway wall about the height that Brother Wolf had been tracing. If he had been carrying her with his arms hanging down, he was more than human tall. Anna didn't say that, though, just told Leslie the facts.
Our perpetrator doesn't leave a scent, so we were pretty confused at first.
She glanced at the missing woman's father, who stood at parade rest, his gaze on the floor.
Because he didn't leave a scent, it might have been someone who had been to the apartment before, someone she knew, but it didn't have that feel. He took her by surprise in the hall in front of the bathroom. She fought him, fought hard. There's a pretty good ding in the drywall next to the bathroom door, but she was no match.
He used a drug, Charles said. I caught a hint of it in the bathroom.
What did the wolf just tell you? Asked Alistair Beauclerk. His voice must have been quite an asset in the courtroom. Cool, even, and beautiful. If she had been human, without her senses to tell her better, she'd never have known that her words had hit him hard. He'd been hoping it was someone he could track down.
The kidnapper drugged her.
She looked at Charles. Do you know what he gave her?
Smelled like ketamine to me, said Charles. But it isn't my area of specialty.
She related his answer and caveat to their listeners, while she thought about how to get Lizzie's father alone to discuss matters away from human ears.
I am sorry we cannot be of more help, Anna said. As you know, we have a stake in this, and no one wants another person dead. Perhaps if we knew more about the Fae who took her, or what exactly the killer was doing to his victims.
She paused and said delicately,
Or is that killers?
Agent Fisher gave her an assessing look, while Mooney, the only regular police officer left on scene, cleared his throat harshly. Beauclerk looked at her with interest. Anna met his gaze and said with no particular emphasis,
We'll find him, but the more we know, the faster we can be.
She turned back to the FBI agent and told her, If you need to get in touch and my phone rings through, you might try Charles's. She rattled off the number, which had a Boston area code because Bran thought that advertising they were from Montana was a mistake. Leslie Fisher's face grew speculative before it returned to neutral. She'd caught that Anna's slip had been on purpose, but she didn't comment out loud.
You might as well go home, Fisher said. If you think of anything else, give me or Agent Goldstein a call.
Chapter 6 Anna locked their door and took the collar off Charles, laying both it and the leash on a small table against the wall.
If her father is an old and powerful Fae, why can't he find her? Anna asked.
Perhaps his power doesn't lie in that direction, answered Brother Wolf. Or there is something blocking him. I do not know a lot about Fae magic, other than to say that no magic has answers for everything. It is a tool. A hammer is a good tool, but not useful for removing screws.
All right, she said. I'll buy that.
She pulled off her shoes and finger-combed her hair. She was tired.
Can you tell me what's wrong with Charles?
Brother Wolf looked at her and said nothing.
I didn't think so, she said. Charles, how can I help if you don't let me in?
You cannot help, Charles replied.
She sucked in a breath.
Did you just lie to me?
She wasn't sure, but it hadn't felt like the truth either. Brother Wolf looked away.
Charles will not let you help.
Fine, she said. There, I lied to you too.
It wasn't fine, not even close to fine.
We should be human when the Fae Lord comes, Brother Wolf said, finally.
Anna didn't know what to say, so she didn't say anything. After a moment, Charles began changing back. It wouldn't take him long, 5 or 10 minutes. The blood of a flathead shaman meant that it took him a lot less time to change than any other wolf she'd met. It hurt to change, hurt more when you did it back and forth in only a couple of hours. And Charles hadn't been in a good place when he'd started. Anna could feel the pain he was in. Faintly, because he'd never let her feel at all if he could help it. It was better to leave him alone for a few minutes. It was better to remove herself from the temptation of a real fight, especially when they could have visitors at any time. And they weren't back to square one, either. Their bond lay open between them,
a testimony that he was better than he had been. It was 4 in the morning. She debated showering and getting dressed, or brushing her teeth and going back to sleep. She didn't make it to the bathroom. The bed was still rumpled from when she'd left it earlier, and it was too inviting to resist. She crawled under the blankets and buried her head in Charles's pillow. She felt more than heard when Charles came into the room. He paused by the bed and patted her rump lightly, and something inside her relaxed.
"Don't get too comfortable, Sleeping Beauty," he rumbled teasingly, sounding like his old self.
He might not be letting her help, but he was making progress just the same, despite his decision to retreat behind Brother Wolf earlier.
"We'll have company sooner rather than later. You made the Fae an obvious offer to give him information the FBI won't, and he won't wait until a polite time of day to come calling. I doubt he'll sleep much as long as his daughter's fate is uncertain. I wouldn't."
She waited until the shower started before pulling her head out from under the blankets. No, Charles wouldn't rest while a child of his was in danger. If he had children. Female werewolves couldn't carry babies to term. The moon called, and they changed to wolves, the violence of it too much for the forming child. She'd asked Samuel, who was a doctor, about staying in wolf form for the full term instead. He'd paled and shaken his head. "The longer you stay a wolf, the less the human rules. If you stay wolf too long, there is no coming back." "I'm an Omega," Anna had told him. "My wolf is different. We could try it." "It always ends badly," her mate's brother had said roughly. "Don't, please, talk to Charles or Da about it. The last one was brutal. There was a woman. She managed to hide from Bran until it was too late. A werewolf isn't a wolf, Anna, who will care and protect its young. When we finally tracked her down, Charles had to kill her, because there was nothing of humanity left, only a beast. He backtracked her to the cave where she'd established her den. She'd given birth, all right, and then she'd killed the baby." His eyes had been raw and wild, so she'd changed the subject. But Anna had her own thoughts on the matter. Brother Wolf was no unthinking creature who would eat his young, and she was pretty sure her own wolf was gentler still. But there was no need for desperate measures yet. The werewolves were out to the world now, with no further need to hide.
There were options for couples who could not have biological children for one reason or another that would work for werewolves as well.
Right now, with the public so ambivalent about werewolves, it would be difficult to try to use a surrogate to carry their child. But they could afford to wait a while for public opinion to change.
"For public opinion to change about what?" asked Charles as he opened the door of the bathroom to let the steam roll out.
He had a towel wrapped around his waist and was drying his long hair with another. She didn't have to answer him because someone rang their doorbell.
The Fae was supposed to call them. She'd left Charles's number. Apparently, he'd decided to drop in uninvited instead.
Anna hadn't undressed, so she ran her fingers through her hair and started toward the door. Charles moved in front of her and dropped the towel he held to the floor.
"No,"
he said. She rolled her eyes but said, "Fine, I'll wait for you." He dressed quickly without apparently rushing while she watched him. Watching Charles dress and undress was one of her favorite things to do, better than wrapping and unwrapping Christmas presents.
Werewolves were, as a whole, young, healthy, and muscled, which were attractive characteristics.
But they all weren't Charles. His shoulders were wide, and his dark skin had a silk-like sheen that invited her fingers to touch. His long, black-as-midnight hair smelled,
"If you don't stop that,"
he said mildly, though he paused with his shirt just over his shoulders so she could see the way the smooth muscles of his back slid down into well-fitted jeans.
"Our gentleman caller might have to wait a while longer."
Anna smiled and reached out to run a finger down his backbone. She pressed her face against his cotton t-shirt and inhaled.
"I missed you," she confessed.
"Yes,"
he said, his voice soft. It got even softer when he said,
I'm not fixed yet.
Broken or whole, she told him, her voice dropping to a growl. You're mine. Better not forget that again. Charles laughed, a small, happy sound.
All right, I surrender. Just don't go after me with that rolling pin.
Anna tugged the shirt down and smoothed it. Then don't do anything to deserve it. She smacked him lightly on the shoulder. That's for disrespecting my grandmother's rolling pin. He turned around to face her, wet hair in a tangled mess around his shoulders. Eyes serious, though his mouth was curved up, he said,
I would never disrespect your grandmother's rolling pin. Your old pack did everything in their power to turn you into a victim. And when that crazy wolf started for me, you still grabbed the rolling pin to defend me from him, even though you were terrified of him. I think it is the bravest thing I have ever seen, and possibly the only time anyone has tried to defend me since I reached adulthood.
He touched her nose, bent down. The doorbell rang, an extended buzz, as if someone was getting impatient. Eyes at half-mast, Charles looked at the front door the same way he would a grizzly or a raccoon that had interfered with his hunt.
I love you, too,
murmured Anna, though she found herself at least as grumpy about the interruption as Charles could possibly be. Let's go see what Lizzie's father has to say. The doorbell rang again. Charles sucked in a breath of air, ran his fingers through his wet hair to get rid of the worst of the tangles, glanced in the mirror on the wall, and froze. Charles? His side of their bond slammed down so fast she couldn't help a faint gasp, but not so quickly that she didn't see that his motivation was singular and huge. He wanted to protect her. Charles didn't look at her, and when the doorbell rang again, he stalked out of the bedroom. She stood where he had, in front of the mirror, and tried to see what it was that had disturbed him so much. Men's voices and a woman's rushed past her ears. The mirror was beveled, set in a plain but well-made frame, and in it she saw herself and a reflection of the walls of the room behind her. There was an original oil painting of a mountain on the wall to the right of her, next to the door to the bathroom. Directly behind her, cream-colored lace curtains hung over the window, still dark with night's rain. What had he seen that he wanted to protect her from? By the time she got out to the living room, Alistair Beauclerk was already inside the condo, and so were Special Agents Fisher and Goldstein. I thought, Beauclerk was saying, it would save time to have us all meet together and put all the cards on the table. My daughter's life is more important than politics and secrets. It was, from a Fey, a shocking move. Anna hadn't had much to do with Fey, but even she knew that they never gave a shred of information to anyone if they could help it. Beauclerk looked at Charles. He had to look up. I know who you are, the Fey told Charles. You just might have a chance of finding her, but not if we're all tripping over the secrets we cannot tell. He glanced over to pull the FBI agents into the conversation. If you withhold something that would have allowed us to find Elizabeth 1 minute sooner, you will regret it. We will talk this morning about things that outsiders do not know, trusting you to use this to stop the killer. Leslie's eyes tightened at the threat, but Goldstein absorbed it without a reaction, not even an increase in heartbeat. He just looked tired and more frail than the last time Anna had seen him. I assure you, Goldstein told Beauclerk, that it is our mission to see that your daughter is found quickly. If we didn't agree with you, we wouldn't be here, no matter what favors you called in. Anna wondered how the FBI or Beauclerk had figured out where she and Charles were staying. The condo belonged to a small company that was wholly owned by a larger company, and so on ad infinitum. The whole thing was owned, in turn, by Aspen Creek, Inc., which was the Maroc. Appearing unannounced was a power move, saying, you can't hide from us. It seemed a little too aggressive for the FBI. She and Charles weren't suspects.
Anna thought it was more likely that Bokler was responsible for the early morning visit, looking to establish dominance with his unannounced invasion of their territory, claiming the point position on the hunt for his daughter. She could see what he was trying to do, but it wouldn't work on Charles, though it might make her mate more dangerous if he decided to take offense. Charles's public face was too good for her to read right now, which told her that he was feeling a whole lot of things he didn't want her to know about. He'd closed their bond to protect her. Anna tried to get mad about it, so she wouldn't have to be worried or hurt, but he was a dominant wolf, and part of being dominant was taking care of what was his. His wife, his mate, headed that list. So Charles would protect her from whatever he thought would attack her through their connection. But he had forgotten something along the way. He was hers. Hers. He was hurting himself to protect her, and she was going to put a stop to it. But not now. Not in public. A good hunter is patient. Charles glanced at Anna, and she narrowed her eyes to tell him that the anger he sensed from her was aimed at him. He raised an eyebrow, and she raised her chin. Redirecting his attention to the intruders, Charles soundlessly gestured everyone to the big sectional sofa in front of the TV. He pulled a hardwood chair away from the dining table for himself and set it to face them over the coffee table. The FBI agents perched on the edge of the sofa. Goldstein appeared more tired than interested, but Leslie Fisher watched Charles intently, not looking him in the eyes, not challenging him, just cataloging. Such intent interest would have put Anna on edge, except there was no heat in Leslie's gaze. It was more of an observing the subject in his native habitat than a he's really hot kind of thing. Bokler, for his part, sank back in the soft material of the couch as if the thought that it would impede him should he have to move quickly had never occurred to him. I'm not afraid of anyone here, his body posture said. Charles's, relaxed, arms folded loosely, chin slightly tilted, said, you're boring me. Either fight and die or back off. Anna grabbed another of the hardwood chairs and parked it next to Charles, then sat down. All right, she said to break the testosterone fest before it could really get going. Who goes first? Charles looked at Bokler.
Do the Fae know that there's been someone hunting them since the 80s?
We are here to share information, Bokler said, spreading his hand magnanimously. I'm happy to begin. Yes, of course we knew. But he's only been hunting the nobodies, the half-bloods, the solitary Fae. No one with family to protect them, no one of real power. His voice was cool.
No one worth putting themselves at risk for, said Charles.
Bokler gave Charles a polite look that was as clear as any adolescent raising his middle finger. We are not pack. We are not all good friends. Mostly we are polite enemies. When a Fae dies, if it is not one of power, who are valuable to us just because there are so few left, if it is not someone who has family or allies with power, mostly other Fae look upon that death with a sigh of relief. First, it was not they who died. Second, it didn't cause anyone else harm. And that Fae is no longer free to make alliances with someone who might be an enemy. His voice deepened just a little on the last sentence. It bothers you, said Leslie. Anna liked competent people. Not many humans were as good at reading others as the wolves were. Leslie was very good to be able to read Bokler so well. Bokler looked at the agent, started to say something, hesitated, then said, Yes, Agent Fisher. It bothers me that a killer was allowed to continue picking off those he chose for nearly half a century. Had I known of it, I would have done something. Which was probably why I was not informed. A mistake I have taken steps to correct. What should have been is, in this case, superseded by what is. A killer who tortures his victims before he kills them has my daughter.
Do you know who or what we are hunting, Mr. Bokler?
asked Goldstein.
Is it a fae?
Yes. I know what kind of fae could get into a building without leaving a scent trail that a werewolf could follow, and could hide so that people who walked past him could not discern that he was there.
It is unusual, said Anna. Most glamour doesn't work on scent.
You can't hide what you don't perceive, agreed Beauclerc. Most of the fae who could follow a scent as well as a werewolf were beast-minded, like the giant in Jack and the Beanstalk. Those fae couldn't hide themselves from the cold iron-carrying Christians who drove us from our homes, so they perished, most of them. But there are a few left who would be capable of perceiving and hiding their scents. Among those who have these abilities, the only one who would also be strong enough to carry my daughter out of her home in a satchel and be mistaken for someone carrying laundry is a horned lord. Goldstein narrowed his eyes.
The old term for a man who is cuckolded, that's not what you mean.
Horned, said Charles. You mean antlered.
Beauclerc nodded.
Yes.
Herne the hunter,
suggested Charles.
Like Herne, agreed Beauclerc. There were never many of them, less than a handful that I'm aware of. The last one on this side of the Atlantic was killed in 1981, hit by a car in Vermont. The driver thought he killed a very large deer, but the accident was witnessed by one of us who could see the fae inside the deer's skin. When no one was looking, we stole the body away.
You think there is another one?
Leslie asked.
The fae nodded. That is what the evidence suggests. If the killer is fae, then why didn't he start hunting fae victims before the fae came out? Anna asked.
That the unsub was fae would explain why he was still active after so many years, why he could take down a werewolf without anyone noticing. But it didn't explain why he began targeting fae only after they admitted their existence.
I am not the killer to know his motivations, Ms. Smith, said Beauclerc.
He bit off the Smith to show that he knew what their last name really was, still jockeying for top dog in the room. Coincidences do happen.
Call me Anna,
she told him in a friendly voice. Most people do. He stared at her a moment. Charles growled, and the fae jerked his eyes off of hers, then frowned in irritation at losing the upper hand. But Anna could feel the whole atmosphere of the living room lighten up as the fight for dominance was lost and won. Beauclerc gave a bow of his head to Charles, then smiled at Anna, and she thought that she'd never seen such a sad expression in her life. In that look, she understood what he was doing and why. He thought his daughter was lost, she saw. He hadn't, not when they were at his daughter's apartment, but something, maybe that the killer was fae, had changed his mind. He was hunting her killer now, not trying to save his daughter. Perhaps that was why he'd given in to Charles so easily.
Coincidence, Beauclerc admitted, is highly overrated. I have an alternative explanation about how a fae could not know what he was until he knew that there were such things as fae.
He glanced around the room, but Anna couldn't tell what he was looking for.
In the height of the Victorian era, Beauclerc said finally, in a quiet, calm voice that belied what her nose told her, when iron horses crossed and crisscrossed Europe, several things became obvious. There was no longer a place for the fae in the old world, and we were too few. From 1908 until just a few years ago, it was the policy of the Grey Lords, those who rule the fae, to find fae of scarce but useful types and force them to marry and interbreed with humans, since humans breed so much more rapidly than we do. Anna knew about that, but she hadn't realized how long it had gone on. From Leslie's face, Anna was pretty sure that the FBI agent hadn't known about the crossbreeding policy. That was interesting, because her face hadn't changed at all when Beauclerc had mentioned the Grey Lords, who were also a deep secret.
Goldstein might have been listening to the weather report for all the change in his face. There was no telling what he knew or didn't know about the Fae. It was believed, continued Vokler, that humans were of weaker bloodlines, and the Fae blood would prevail. And humans breed so very easily, even with the Fae for a partner. He closed his eyes and drew in a deep breath. The wisdom of these forced interbreedings is now being re-examined. Half-blood Fae face many challenges. They, for the most part, are not accepted by the other Fae, and too many of them exhibit odd properties. Birth defects are very high. Once fathered or mothered, a high percentage of the halflings were abandoned by their Fae parent altogether, which left them to discover who and what they were on their own, to sometimes disastrous results. And a large number of the children have turned out to be entirely human. Charles sat back.
Like your daughter?
He said in a soft voice. Like my daughter. The only thing she gets from me is my mother's love of dance, and she has to train hours every day to do what my mother did effortlessly. Vokler looked down, then back at Charles. You are old, but not so old as your father. Maybe you can understand why I fought this dictate as hard as anything I've ever fought against. To deceive a human woman for the purpose of fathering a child upon her, it is dishonorable, yes, and yet it gave me someone I care deeply about. He drew in a breath and then looked Charles in the eye. It was not a challenge, more a way of showing how serious he was. It is not wise, Vokler said, his voice clipped, and somewhere in the vowels, Anna heard an accent not too far from Bran's when he was angered. It is not wise to give something old and powerful something they care about. And I am very old. He looked at the FBI agents. Even, possibly, older than your father. We haven't compared notes. Leslie reacted to the idea that a werewolf could be older than an old Fae, an immortal old Fae. Goldstein just looked more tired. And maybe that was a reaction, too. Don't get the wrong idea, Anna told them. The average life expectancy for someone from the time they are changed and become a werewolf is about 10 years.
8,
said Charles, sounding as weary as Goldstein looked. Anna knew her data had been correct last year. She reached out and touched his thigh, but he didn't look at her. Charles wasn't, she thought, totally involved with the proceedings. He kept glancing over the couch to the wall of windows beyond. She frowned, noting how, with the sky still dark outside, the window reflected the room back at them. He was seeing something in the reflection. 4 out of 10 of our halfling children survive to adulthood, Vokler was saying. They are a favorite prey of other Fae if they are not protected. My daughter is 23 in 2 weeks. Anna glanced at Charles. He didn't appear to be listening, and whatever he was seeing in the window mirrors was making him more and more remote. What kind of dancer is your daughter? Anna asked suddenly. I saw ballet shoes, but also ballroom costumes. She hadn't, not really, but Brother Wolf had, and had kept her informed. Ballet, Lizzie's father said. Ballet and modern. One of her friends is into ballroom dancing, and she partnered with him for a while a couple of years back. Ballroom is for fun, and ballet for serious, she told me. Vokler smiled at Anna. When she was 6, she dressed for Halloween as a fairy princess, complete with wings. She was dancing around the room, and I asked her why she wasn't flying. She stopped and told me quite earnestly that her wings were make-believe, that dancing was the closest she could do to flying, and she loved to fly. It wasn't enough. Charles was still preoccupied. Anna touched Charles's face and waited until he turned from the window. Lizzie Beauclerc is not quite 23. She loves to dance. And she's all alone with a monster who will torture and kill her if we don't find her soon. You are her best hope. She didn't add, so suck it up and pay attention, but she trusted that he heard it in her voice. Charles tilted his head, though his face was quiet. At least he wasn't looking in the windows anymore. Remember that, Anna told him fiercely as she dropped her hand. You can't change the past, but this we can do. Beauclerc answered first, it's our turn. What do we know that would help the hunt? She met Charles's gaze and held it until he shifted his weight forward and gave a brief nod.
The bodies that the police have been finding are cut up.
Charles turned to the FBI agents.
I smelled black magic, blood magic, on the man who took Lizzie Beauclerc. That makes me think witches, and that those cuts on the victims might be significant. The Fae have no use for blood magic.
It doesn't work for us, said Beauclerc,
but his voice was absent-minded. He was watching Charles, not looking him in the eye. Not quite. Goldstein said,
I have more details on that.
He opened up his briefcase and handed Charles a thick file of photographs.
Most of the victims have shapes carved into their skin. We've been looking at the witchcraft or voodoo angle for the past 10 years, but the witches willing to talk to us only say that it's not anything they know. Not voodoo or hoodoo, it's not runes, it's not hieroglyphs, nor any other symbolic language used by witches.
Charles opened up the folder and then spread the photos out on the coffee table. These were mostly blow-ups or close-ups, some in black and white, some in color. Names, dates, and numbers were written in white marking pen on the upper left corner. The photos documented symbols, ragged and dark around the edges. Some of the markings were ripped down the middle by angry slashes. Others were distorted by degradation of the flesh they had been carved in.
They lied to you,
said Charles, bending over to get a closer look at one.
Who?
The witches,
said Beauclerc. He pulled one out of the mix, then set it back down quickly. He closed his eyes for a moment, and when he opened them again, they were hot with rage or terror. Anna's nose wasn't sure which.
The symbols witches use,
Beauclerc told Goldstein in polite, formal tones, follow family lines for the most part. I can't, but the witches should have been able to tell you what family line these came from. There's something wrong with the way they're placed or the shape. In a very long life, I have seen many things. I do not perform blood magic, but I've seen it often enough. Charles turned one of the photos to view it from a different angle and frowned. He took his phone out of his pocket and took a close-up of one of the photos. He hit a few more buttons and put the phone to his ear.
Charles, said Bran.
Ears might hear,
warned Charles, telling his father that there was someone else in the room who could overhear their phone call.
I sent you a photo. Looks like witchcraft to me. What do you think?
I'll call you back, Bran said, and hung up.
Goldstein rubbed his face, tiredly.
We're supposed to be holding these back from the public, he said. Can I ask that the photo won't hit the internet or the news services?
You're safe, Anna reassured him. We're calling in an expert opinion.
The phone rang before anyone could say anything. Charles put it on speaker as he answered it.
Everyone can hear you now, he said.
There was a little pause before Bran spoke.
You need to get a witch to look at that. It appears to be something from the Irish clans to me, but it doesn't look quite right. Some of those symbols are nonsense, and a few others are drawn wrong. It would be best if the witch could see the real thing, not just the photos. There's more to a spell than only the visual can tell you.
Thanks,
Charles said, hanging up without ceremony.
So anyone know a local witch we can talk to?
I know a witch, said Leslie, but she's in Florida.
Charles shook his head.
If we're going to bring someone up, I know a reliable one or two, Do you know any in Boston?
He looked at Bolkler, who shook his head. I know of none who would help.
If we find someone, Anna said, could we get her in to see one of the bodies?
We can arrange it, said Leslie.
All right, then, let's call the local Alpha and see if he has a witch who will cooperate with us.
Charles dialed and then gave Anna his phone.
He likes you better. You ask him.
He's scared of me, Anna said, feeling a little smug.
This is Owens.
Isaac, this is Anna, she said. We need a witch.
The FBI agents left to arrange a viewing for the witch, who wouldn't be available until 10 in the morning. Bolkler told them he was going to see if he could find anyone who might know if the Horned Lord, who died in 1981, had left any half-blood children behind. Anna waited until Charles had closed the door.
What do you see in the mirror? She asked him.
He closed his eyes and did not turn to look at her.
Charles?
There are things, he said slowly, that are made better by talking them out. There are things that are given more power when you speak of them. These are of the second variety.
She thought about that for a moment and then went to him. The muscles of his back were tight when she touched them with her fingertips.
It doesn't appear, she said slowly, that being silent about whatever it is has helped either.
What kinds of things did he not like to talk about?
Evil, she remembered. Is it like a Harry Potter thing?
He turned his head then.
What?
A Harry Potter thing, she said again. You know,
don't say Voldemort's name because you might attract his attention. He considered it.
You mean the children's book?
I have got to get you to watch more movies, she said. You'd enjoy these. Yes, I mean the children's book.
He shook his head.
Not quite. Noticing some things make them more real. They are already real to me. If you notice them, they might become real to you as well, and that would not be good.
Suddenly, she knew. Charles had told her once that he didn't speak his mother's name for fear that it would tie her to this world and not let her go on to the next. Ghosts, he'd told her, need to be mourned and then released. If you keep them with you, they become unhappy and tainted.
Ghosts, she said, and he drew in a sharp breath and stepped away from her, closer to the window.
Don't,
he said sharply. She'd have snapped back at him if she hadn't remembered that when he'd closed down their bond, he'd been worried about her.
All right, she said slowly. You feel better than before we came here, though, right?
If he was getting better, he was dealing with it. He had to think about that one before he answered her.
Yes, not good, but better.
She wrapped her arms around his waist from behind and breathed him in. I'll leave it alone if you promise me one thing.
What's that?
If it starts getting worse again, you'll tell me. And you'll tell Bran.
I can do that.
All right. She brushed off the back of his shirt as if there were some lint or something on it, and not as though her hands were hungry for the warmth of his skin. Sleep or breakfast? She asked briskly. We have 2 hours before the FBI picks us up and takes us to the morgue. The small, sheet-covered body on the table smelled of rotting flesh, salt, and fish, none of which managed to quite cover up the lingering scent of terror. From the size of the corpse, Anna thought he might have been 7 or 8. Anna had been changed by rape, both physical and metaphorical. She had served 3 years in a pack led by a madwoman, during which time death had become something to look forward to, an end to pain. Charles had changed all of that.
And Anna appreciated the irony that the Morrocks wolf killer, arguably the most feared werewolf in the world, had made her safe and made her want to live.
Irony aside, Anna knew death. The morgue smelled of it, as well as a healthy dose of antiseptic, latex gloves, and body fluids. When they had entered the small viewing room, the scent of a little boy added itself to the mix. A boy who rightfully should be out playing with his friends, and instead bore the unmistakable signs of autopsy. Beside her, Brother Wolf growled, the sound low enough that she didn't think any of the humans heard it. He'd come as Wolf, again.
Anna dug her fingers through the fur of his neck and swallowed hard, trying to focus on something besides the little body on the table.
Even worry about her mate was better than a dead child. Charles promised that he'd let her know if it got worse. But he hadn't reopened the bond between them, not even wide enough that he could talk to her while he was in wolf shape.
His family were supposed to pick him up today, said the man who'd let them in.
He was dressed in scrubs that were clean and fresh. Either he was just beginning his day or he'd changed for them.
When I explained to them that a werewolf had offered to look for clues we couldn't find, it was not difficult to persuade them to leave him here until tomorrow.
You didn't tell his parents they were bringing me, too?
Said the witch, who looked like she'd come right out of a 1970s sitcom. Middle-aged, a little dumpy, a little rumpled,
hair an improbable shade of red,